From the shores of Puget Sound, this is Healthy Homecast. Healthy Homecast is created and operated by Healthy Painting and HealthyPainting.com. Healthy Homecast is your source for information, news, and events that focus on environmental responsibility, environmental consciousness, and eco-related products and practices. Find us on the web at www.healthyhomecast.com. And now your host, Daryl Whalen.
Okay, hello, and welcome to Healthy Homecast. This is episode 13. I'm Daryl Whalen here with Tony Freis, and this week's guests are Drew Foster and Stefan Hansmeier from Encompass Cottage Company. We'll be right back to find out about them and their company after Tony brings us some news about upcoming events in and around our area. Take it away, Tony. It's time for some healthy news, information, and events that are happening throughout the Puget Sound area. Sponsored by PigeonPointPC.com.
Alrighty, and welcome to the news. First up is a threefer. This is the Seattle Community Solar Q&A. It's going to be taking place at three different locations, which I'll get to here in just a moment. Everybody can come on down to a family-friendly workshop to learn about Seattle City Light's new community solar project. In solar picnic shelters at Jefferson Park, refreshments will be provided. City Light customers can purchase a $600 solar unit representing 1/500th of the solar energy produced by the project and reap bill credits for the next 9 years. Enrollment is open to all Seattle City Light customers on a first-come, first-served basis. Only 500 solar units are available for the first project. Now, first time and location will be Wednesday, July 20th, 2011, from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. This is taking place at the Delridge Community Center at 4501 Delridge Way Southwest in Seattle. Next up is Ballard. This will be taking place Saturday, July 30th, 2011, from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Ballard Library at 5614 22nd Avenue Northwest in Seattle. And last but not least is Queen Anne, which will be taking place at the Queen Anne Library located at 400 West Garfield in Seattle. For more information, you can visit www.seattle.gov/community solar. And next events on the list is 10 by 10 by 10. This is the 9th annual celebration showcasing the best sustainable and residential and commercial building projects in the Puget Sound area. 10 by 10 by 10 is an event hosted by the Northwest Eco Building Guild. So what's it all about? This is going to be 10 projects, 10 slides, 10 minutes. A fast-paced design slam of innovation, passion, knowledge, and practicality. Tickets are $20 in advance till September 8th or $30 at the door. For more information, visit www.ecobuilding.org/guild-chapters/Seattle. And last but not least is a little piece of news. This is the National Park Service Technical Assistance Program. So are you trying to protect your local rivers, save an unspoiled landscape, or build trails where everyone in your community can enjoy nature? You have until August 1st to consider using the National Park Service's Technical Assistance Program. The National Park Service can help. Every year, the National Park Service helps hundreds of locally driven projects that create opportunities for healthy outdoor recreation, connect youth with the outdoors, and connect communities to parks. Rivers, trails, and conservation assistance from the National Park Service provides no funding, but our experienced staff can help communities plan for success. Applications for technical assistance will be accepted until August 1st. Potential applicants are strongly encouraged to discuss their project ideas with a staff member in your area before preparing an application. You can visit www.mps.gov/RTCA for complete information and application. That is the news, and now back to the podcast.
Please feel free to send any news, information, and events that focus on environmental consciousness and responsibility, as well as health, happiness, safety, and well-being, to info@healthyhomecast.com. And now, back to Healthy Homecast. Well, thank you very much, and you will find links to those events posted on healthyhomecast.com along with episode 13. On our last episode, we heard from Bill Daly from numerous ventures we'll call BD Coatings. And on our next show, we are scheduled to hear from Ann Dorn, who will talk to us about Seattle Natural Awakenings magazine. Right now, it's time to meet our guests, Drew Foster and Stefan Hansmeier. I met Drew about 7 years ago while doing some volunteer work and found that we both worked in the contracting field. Then I had the opportunity to do some painting work on a few of their projects, and where I met Stefan, we soon found that we all shared a commitment to responsible and sustainable construction practices. Since that time, they've established Encompass Cottages with the idea that dreaming big and building small is living more. I love that tagline. So we're here to talk about what that is, why this matters, and what this means to all of us. You can find information how to contact the guests, links to some of the things we'll be talking about during the interview, as well as things the guests see as important to share, posted along with this episode, number 13 on healthyhomecast.com. So let's start by introducing yourselves, telling us what you do, and give us some history on how, when, and why your company came about.
Well, thanks, Daryl. My name is Drew Foster. Stefan and I joined forces in 2002 as we entered into our business partnership with Encompass Construction. A couple years ago, when we realized that the codes were leaning towards changing in our city to allow the backyard cottages to be built, we started putting together a plan to try to get a piece of that market, I guess.
Well, it's Daryl, thanks for having us here. This is Stefan Hansmeier.
You're welcome, Stefan. Andrew.
So backyard cottages is something that's been interesting to us for a while for a lot of reasons, and that the city finally moved to allow them citywide seemed like a great opportunity, not just to have some impact, but also from a business point of view, it looked like a great opportunity. So we're excited that this is here now. And what can I say?
Great. So why don't we back up a little bit? And I didn't want to make you think that we weren't going to talk about Encompass Construction too. So why don't we talk a little bit about, let's back up pre the cottage thing and talk about how you built up your company. And
that's a nice segue, thanks, because a lot of how we chose to set up Encompass Cottage Company was based on how we'd been running the construction company, which is primarily a remodel firm. Our approach from the beginning has been that it's really important to understand the values and things that really matter to our clients. So our process is to get very involved in understanding what really makes sense to our clients, ask a lot of questions, and try to come up with a plan to fit their remodel or their cottage program plans that makes sense for them. Drew might have some other thoughts on that. But
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Stefan and I started working together in 2002, and we were both running our independent remodel contracting companies, living in West Seattle. and actually, you know, had known each other for years prior to that as well. So we got ourselves into a habit of calling each other for help on each other's projects. That coupled with, you know, driving around Seattle for a couple of years and brainstorming and thinking about how we actually seem to be working really well together as a team and had opposite and complementary, you know, skill sets and abilities. It just really, really was kind of a no-brainer. And so we formed the construction company as a design build company because of our desires to work directly with the clients and helping them obtain their dreams and visions through the design was part of the goal as well, not just the construction. And then as we grew and became what we are, which I guess is we're just a we're a remodel construction business in Seattle. And
I'm going to chime in. And
yeah,
say
chime that, in on that for you. Yeah, help me out. Help me with that.
While you're stuck here. I'm going to chime in and say that the other reason that design build mattered to us was that we wanted to have control over the design process so that we could manage and control project cost, and that's a huge component of a successful project. And we brought that into the cottage company as well. So we've partnered with a couple of architects that are really on our page. One of them's worked for developers for quite a while, so he understands what it means to think in terms of value engineering as well as good design. With the goal being, let's design projects, whether they're remodels or cottages, that fit a budget rather than let's design something and see what it'll cost. To me, that's goes hand in hand with sustainability. Sustainability is an all-encompassing sort of concept. It's very holistic, and part of that is what's economically sustainable. So
that is very true. So how about let's go back before 2002. You're a couple young guys, but obviously you don't just get into the construction and carpentry business. How and when did you learn the trade? And is there anyone or any particular thing or people that influenced you into that line of work for yourselves?
Sure. Before I became a construction guy, I was in the restaurant business and ran and managed both the front and the back ends of a restaurant. Learned the kitchen, and that's kind of what allowed me to break into the construction. Was I was, you know, hired to build a restaurant, and at that time I put on some belts and actually built the restaurant, and then I ran it. And during that time frame, I just realized the passion for building things and creating things that lasted longer than 10 or 15 minutes, like a plate of food. So off and running into that. And Steve Kunkel, Master Builders, was a guy that I've mentored with for a couple of years. And he was pretty much responsible for teaching me the business of the business, I guess, of remodeling, not just how to cut a piece of wood, nail it together, which gets credited to other guys. But Steve really set me on the path.
How about you, Stefan? How did you get into this carpentry and construction
Well,
field?
My dad is an architect and has owned his own architecture firm for over 40 years. And we did projects together when I was growing up. And he instilled in me both an appreciation for the craft as well as some sense about what it means to run a business and be successful as a member of the community. After college, where I earned a degree in design, I went to go work for a custom home builder. Because it just sounded like fun, and I had this sort of interest at that time as a young kid out of college. I wanted to move out into the woods and live off the grid, and so I thought it'd be a great skill to learn to build a house. But I wound up really realizing how much of a blast it was to put stuff together and think about all those systems and issues that go into building a house, and just it was a fun process. So I sort of bounced around between carpentry and IT for several years, and then I had an interesting conversation with Drew one day on the phone, and he suggested I take some time off and help him build something because he was working as an independent contractor, and this was, I don't know, 12 years ago at least. And so I took a week off of work and took my vacation time and went and built a deck with Drew and had so much fun that 6 months later I quit my job and formed a small remodel firm, and Drew and I started working together. So...
Cool. And I do know you guys personally, and I know a little bit about you from the business and the field side. And I can say that going to Drew's thing about the restaurant, you know, a successful restaurant is really a well-oiled machine. And I know that you guys as a business across the board are pretty phenomenal. Please share a bit about each of your roles in the company, how they have developed over the years, and what the key is to managing a successful co-ownership.
That's a great question. We had a conversation about this today because we were like, you know, things change as time goes on. Your roles change, your perspective changes, and so it's always in flux. But we sort of try to take on some specific roles that each one of us covers, and then there's some stuff where we overlap. So.
That's how it is now. It started where, of course, Steph and I were everything in the company. You know, we wore all the hats from the sales to the marketing to the accounting to the demo crew, the construction crew, the cleanup crew. It's just pretty much everything. And there's where we kind of learned a lot about each other's strengths, and we learned to, you know, complement each other in those areas. So we became a pretty powerful duo in that regard. But then we also found ourselves naturally, you know, feeling like we were doing everything all the time and we need help. And so that's where we thought, well, how are we going to do a little more or make it a little easier or a little better, or how can we relieve some of this, you know, workload? So we hired some people, and it was fortunate for us that we hired some really good guys about 5 years ago, and we were in the field then a lot, and so we trained them on what we thought was important, and we oversaw all of the jobs with them for about a year and a half until I first kind of dropped my belts, and then Stefan dropped his belts really shortly after that as well. And now we're getting to the point where we work primarily on the business, don't have to be in the field as often, and when we are in the field, it's because, you know, we're out there doing We're keeping abreast of production schedules and time lines in which things get done, and
sometimes we're helping out.
Sometimes we help out, yeah,
which is pretty darn fun. Now it was fun then too. Actually, those early years were pretty formative because while Drew and I were basically tied at the hip, we had a lot of conversations about our values, what mattered in terms of, you know, not just the workmanship but also our relationship to the clients and our responsibility to the community, and all those things developed into, I think, where we are now.
Cool. Well, we all know that there's a lot of people that do the type of stuff that we do in this town and as well as all over the world. How does what you do differ from what others do, and what makes your company so special?
So I'm going to throw out that one of the things that we've really strived to make a cornerstone of our successfulness is the level and detail of planning and consideration that goes into every project. When we were developing what we wanted our business model to be, we knew that we wanted to offer all of the services, all of the quality, all of the craftsmanship, all of the professionalism that what we would call the big firms offered, but we wanted to keep it small. We wanted to keep it personable. We wanted to make sure that we were connected to our clients, that the relationships we had with our subs and our employees was tight. And we've really worked on that. So I think that's kind of unique in some respects because the level of service we provide is probably superior to a lot of small design build firms, but yet we operate like a small design build firm.
Great. Do you have anything you want to say about that?
No.
Perfect.
I'm going to throw in one more thing. You know, sustainability has been a driving force for several years for us in terms of business development. And we've taken some what I would consider to be fairly substantial steps toward educating ourselves, getting involved in the community, being participants and partners with other organizations, and really being as informed and as getting as much experience as we can get, so that when we work with a client, we really can hone in on what matters to them and how that relates or translates into sustainable practices and products that go into their project.
Great. Now, thanks for saying that, because I do now have something to say on that. From my perspective, what's most important is that my client receive as much of their dream in their remodel or their cottage that they can actually have. And with that being said, there's a lot of shredding of, say, on my side, an ego that might go along with some other concept of an image. It has to be done this way. I don't operate that way, and I try to let my clients know that what my job for them is to do is help them realize their goals and their dreams. Because after I'm done with the project, I'm going to leave, and they're going to stay there, and I want them to be happy with their home or their project, you know, for years and years and years to come after I'm gone. So it's not about me picking something out for somebody else. It's I try to assist people to get have them get what they desire. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense to me. So we are providing a service, so there's a lot of personal reward in allowing the client to have some control, because ultimately it's their dreams that are being tended to, and not our ego that's being thrust upon somebody.
Sure. Yeah, no, I want them to have as much control of the project as they feel they need to within a certain, you know, parameter, because obviously for me to do my job, it requires me to have some control and authority to move and make actions and stuff like that, you know.
And then generally the people that are going to hire you, you're going to have comfort and trust in your skill and your experience.
Yeah, I would think so.
So is there anything that you would like people to know or to understand about what you do or the line of work you're in that they may not really be aware of already or clear about?
Well, that's a question that usually comes up somewhere in our, you know, our first couple initial meetings with a client. You know, they're usually contacting us because they have a need. They want to do a bathroom remodel, a kitchen remodel. They want to build a cottage. So they already know why they're contacting me. When they do, you know, I know initially why they're contacting me, but I have a lot of work ahead of me to figure out, you know, what they really want, how they want to get there. And that's the real work. And sometimes
I'm going to throw that in the context of health and sustainability, that, it's challenging that we live in a culture where green is turned into a marketing term. And so I try to ask a lot of specific questions about values and what really matters to the client so that I can help them sort of weed through the options in terms of whether it's a green product or a sustainable building practice or design choices that will impact their lives in a positive way. Those are really important questions to start asking early on so that you can help your client get to where they want to go.
Yeah, no, that's great. We'll talk about getting into that a little bit later into the interview. And the whole thing about green is it's so complex.
It means something different to almost everybody.
To every single person, yeah. And is while in one aspect green could be energy efficient, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's healthy.
That's a good point.
So at when did you introduce cottage building to your business, and what was the catalyst for that introduction?
You know, we'd done a couple projects of that nature before we launched Encompass Cottage Company. And at that time, we couldn't call them a cottage, or what the city of Seattle calls a DADU, detached accessory dwelling unit. So we had to call them, you know, a garage with a rec room over it or some such thing. But essentially, the concept was the same. And those were some of the funnest projects we ever did. And we've been following the issue through the city for years. And then when the council decided to pass Gordon saying you could build them everywhere in the city, we jumped on that opportunity. And we just finished a fantastic example of what's possible with the backyard cottage in Ballard last year. Very, very energy efficient structure. Lots of, quote, green features. You want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, the building itself is above and beyond anything that we've ever built to date, with the systems that are involved. And as Stefan mentioned, the level of energy efficiency that went into it, the level of insulation and the whole idea, the passive solar being set up for that to be received, the rainwater collection systems, the photovoltaic systems that are in place. That was actually just recently on the Northwest Eco Building Guild tour, I think, last month.
Yeah, the Green Homes tour last month.
Green Homes tour, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, so, well, there's been a huge movement over the last number of years in the small homes and in, like, the minimalism and the simplicity kind of a movement. You know, there's... So keeping in mind that we're a resource from everyone, from the very informed to those that are not so informed, please tell us what cottages are and what cottage building is, why is it important, and what benefit does it have for all of us?
You want to answer that? Sure. Well, a few facts. Since the cottage is, as Steph mentioned, called a DADU, Detached Accessory Dwelling Unit. It cannot be larger than 800 square feet. It has to be positioned in the yard of the lot with the setbacks that are in place, and so it has some restrictions, but they're very, very doable as far as what you can do and what you can't do. It's very lined out. You know, there's some height restrictions. As well.
And we're talking City of Seattle.
City of Seattle.
Other municipalities may have different requirements or restrictions.
So that's what a cottage is. And you can use that structure for a separate office. You can use it for a residence for your, you know, mother or mother-in-law or your college student. You could rent that out as an income property as well. Interestingly enough, you could even rent out your main structure for 6 months of the year. What you have to do as the owner of the house and the cottage, you have to reside in one or the other for 6 months of the year. So really, you know, if you had a place in Arizona, you could live there for 6 months and rent out your cottage year-round and your house for 6 months and be living, you know, the good life of in the winter you're in Arizona, and the summer you're here. So that's what the cottage is.
What I like about cottages in this context is that here's an opportunity to take advantage of existing municipal infrastructure, you know, and here's an opportunity to create more affordable housing on existing lots, and here's an opportunity to create more flexibility for both the tenants and the folks who own those properties. And because it's new construction in already developed locations, here's another opportunity to build at a higher standard than the homes in the current area. So it seems like a win-win from a lot of different perspectives from that point of view.
So how does cottage building differ or not differ, or what are the things that you've brought from the regular type of building and remodeling to the cottage industry?
Well, the cottage build is unique. It's really a small house, standalone small house. So some lots and yards and neighborhoods are going to be more, they're going to be set up to handle them a little easier than others. Things you have to be concerned with are, you know, big trees, power lines, access, stuff like that to build one. But you're building a small house, so you have a foundation you have to deal with. You have to get the utilities hooked up, the plumbing and the electrical. And after you get through that, which is really the big part sometimes, then you're just building a small little home, you know, and you get to finish it out in the way you like it.
It's different than remodeling, too, in the sense that with remodeling, you're having to retrofit stuff into an existing structure, and you're dealing with all kinds of strange things that come up in an older home. And this is basically new construction. And so you get to really pick and choose what matters in a way that you can't in remodeling. You know, if you want it to be super energy efficient, you can do that. Whereas with a remodel, you might make the addition that you're putting on really energy efficient, but then all the heat's just leaking out into the rest of the house. It's, you know, it's a different sort of thing. And you also have the opportunity within the constraint of the 800 square feet to design something that meets your needs. You know, if you want to design something for someone who's going to be aging in place, there's a great opportunity to do that. If you've got if you want to design something that's got demountable walls so you can move things around as needs change, you can do that. So there's a lot of opportunity there.
So why is this small home thing, why is this important? What benefit does it have for others?
Well, there's been a huge trend over the last 15 years in America of building what I like to think of as McMansions. And I'm not sure that that's practical or sustainable. I think it's led to some horrible problems that come out of the urban sprawl that results from that, and it's created there's not enough affordable housing out there. And small homes address both of those issues as well as all the other things I cited, you know, making use of existing infrastructure and the opportunity to build smaller means you're using less energy, less resources, less material waste. All those things come into play with a smaller structure. I also think it's really fun to build small structures because it really makes you think about what matters. It's really, you know, kind of easy to go out and build a giant 3,000 square foot house and have a room for every activity. But when you have to start thinking
and
about
two people living there.
Yeah. But when you have to start thinking about, you know, the small space and how do you make use of this small space? How does an existing, you know, how does one room serve multiple purposes? And how do you deal with all those things? That's actually a really fun exercise. I lived in a very small space for a couple of years. It was just a few hundred square feet, and it really made me pick and choose the things that mattered most in my life. You know, I got this great opportunity to get rid of a bunch of stuff and then to acquire things that fit in those few hundred square feet that made sense.
I live in a big house.
I know you do. So yeah, my place here is 333 square feet. It's interesting. It really has given me an opportunity to look at things in a different perspective. To Drew's defense, though, he does have a whole family.
Thanks, Daryl.
Well, you know, I did a remodel at my house, and I had just finished a project for a client where we put in lots of really cool lighting. And so I thought, well, you know, when I do my living room, I'm going to put in some cool lighting. And now that I've done it, I'm looking at all this lighting, and I'm like, do I need all those lights? What am I doing here? How much heat is just going whoop right through the ceiling?
Oh, yeah, that's the LED guy on here, as a matter of fact. Thank you. That's great stuff. You know, I remember when we were younger, and before we were around, you know, the trend actually when I grew up in Ohio was all the houses were pretty darn small. I mean, after the wars and stuff like that, people weren't. And then the houses got really, you say the over the last 15 years, I actually think that it's probably been longer than that. But I actually think I'd like to believe that it's going down to more of a medium home overall. And the thing I was thinking is about the urban sprawl and the big houses and everything has really dismantled the community quite a bit. And everybody builds their big homes and they put their fences around it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I look at from the small home thing and putting them closer together on the same properties and stuff, it puts you in a position to create a wonderful community and have people have more of a relationship and stuff, because community is definitely about health. So you mentioned something about 800 square feet. What's the smallest home or cottage that you guys have worked on so far?
Drew's office is probably a great example of that. It's how many square feet do you got in there? It's a detached structure.
12 by 14, maybe.
Does it have the plumbing and the bathroom and the whole nine yards?
It does,
huh?
Yeah, it's got
a little kitchen area and stuff?
It has a sink. a wet bar sink, right? It's got a real tiny, small refrigerator in there.
Yeah.
Right? So it's got a bathroom, a toilet, and a shower, you know, and it's got heated floors. The main room. So the main room, you know, had a Murphy bed in it at one point. So it's been taken out, and there's the office has been put in there. But
and it's 12 by what?
14.
Yeah, sweet.
12 by 14.
Got everything you need. Are there a lot of people doing this kind of construction?
You're talking about backyard cottages?
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly popular right now. I mean, we get a lot of interest, and we talk to other people in our builders community and hear about folks who are building them. Yeah. I don't know offhand how many were built in Seattle last year.
I don't either, but they're only issuing 50 permits a year for these in the Seattle area. I don't think they issued 50 in 2010.
Wow. For those that might be listening outside of our area, is there that you know of a national resource for information or recognized contractors in the cottage industry?
I'm not aware of that on a national level.
You might take a look at Micro House Northwest. That's our architect partner, and he's got a blog that's a cottage housing blog.
We'll put that on our site, too. Yeah. Put that link on there.
Microhouse.com.
So, by the way, I love your when we were getting ready to meet and stuff, I looked up your site, and I just love your – is that your tagline, the dreaming big and building small is living more?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because I know that we're talking about these big 3,000-square-feet houses and stuff, and I think that we can actually get overwhelmed and consumed by all the stuff that could be potentially going on in there. And I personally see that it – you know, it could potentially have some detrimental effects. What can you tell us what your personal mission statement is for each of you personally or that of your company and what that means to your clients and your potential clients and the world in general?
Wow. That's a really good question.
Yeah, we have a mission
statement. We get very
statement.
Esoteric here.
We have a mission statement, and I know it's written down and it's on a computer. And, you know, it goes along right there with our employee handbook and all that other stuff that we should probably have in a frame.
You know, I'm gonna chime in here and just say that, especially in terms of cottages, and actually now remodeling, this kind of falls into that same picture because definitely the scope of projects that come through the door now are smaller, and it's a reflection, I think, of not just the economic conditions we're in, but also people's sense of values. But I'm going to say it's dream big, build small, and live more.
Yeah. That's a great mission statement, by the way.
I mean, yeah.
I love it.
That actually translates into our way of thinking about business, too.
So I'm gonna take that on myself, too, you know, just as a small part of me by proxy, and I'll remember where I got it from. So rather than calling out others as being wrong or bad, our goal is to educate, edify, and inspire positive change. Please point out areas where greenwashing appears in your field, where others may be falling short, doing things that you believe they shouldn't do, or are missing altogether.
I'm going to say greenwashing is so pervasive right now that it's almost impossible to know what's what. I think everybody has a responsibility to think about and learn about sustainability at all levels, government, education, business, everywhere. And anyone who's in denial about where sustainability is taking us, give it a couple of years, and if you're not prepared to make those shifts, the legislation is going to come down that's going to require it, because if we don't start making some pretty significant changes in the way we live and think about our relationship to one another, our communities, our world, a couple generations from now aren't going to have the quality of life we have now.
Ditto.
Ditto. Okay, can you offer tips here and now where others can possibly improve? I noticed you mentioned a few things about education, and there's a ton of resources. Do you?
Well, it's an, we are, our next step as the Encompass Cottage Company is to launch a forum of informational
workshops.
Thank you. That was what I was looking for. Yeah. So we have been going through and putting together our presentation. We've secured a site in which we can host these forums. And right now, our next step is trying to determine just exactly how we're going to get, you know, the publicity or the word out there that we're having these forums. Then we intend to educate those that are interested in, you know, the cottage industry just about the process of building a cottage. I think that'd be one of the next steps that we're working on.
Great. Yeah. And we'll help in our small little way. You could let us know and we'll announce them actually on our news segment, and then we'll post the links on our site. Do you have any other thoughts about that?
What was the last part of that question again?
Offering any tips on where others can improve, not making anyone wrong or bad.
Oh, right.
You're talking about people in our industry. Right?
In our industry, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say it's education. I mean, sustainability, if you look at it from the big picture, is a very involved, holistic process. And it's a lot more than just putting in a package of light bulbs or, you know, or flooring that doesn't smell weird. It's all kinds of things. And the more you know about it and the more you can appreciate the relationships between those things and what it means and how it matters, and then communicate that with your client and understand what that means and how that matters to them, that's going to be what's going to make the difference.
Yeah. The key to that, too, though, is that as we've danced around or we haven't even discussed the fact that, you know, all of this requires some form of capital, some form of money from the client, you know. So that's the challenge that we can be faced with is, you know, discussing doing all these wonderful things or the possibility of doing these things and balancing that with the reality of the budget that someone might have to spend. So what Stefan was describing was, you know, the time during the conversations where we talk to them, we find out what really matters, how they live their life, what's important to them. And that's where we suggest that they would invest, you know, portions of their capital and their money to spend on a project. So
those are always interesting conversations because it gets you into talking about the life cycle cost of particular choices. You know, are you going to make a larger investment up front for a greater return later, or do you just want to put in the cheap thing now and replace it in 5 years or deal with the health consequences of that or whatever. And that's an involved conversation. People really have to take some time to really appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. Not only that, but it brings us to our second career field, and that's as marriage counselors.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, so you never know how people are going to respond, you know, to those choices when they're faced with having to make them.
Yeah, well. So what advice do you have for someone who is seeking the type of services you provide?
I'm going to throw out that because there are so many people who want to jump into the, quote, green bandwagon, it's really important to ask a lot of questions. Ask the whos, the whats, the whys, the wheres. And if you don't like the answers you're getting, keep looking.
Mm. And I guess if you're asking those questions and someone can't answer those questions, don't be surprised either.
That's a good point, yeah.
There's just so much stuff out there that, you know, I know this little portion of the segment of what I do well enough that I can speak to it. And then there's all this other part of my big pie that I know a little bit about, and I know how to find out information, and I know how to assist or help, but I'm not an expert, you know.
I think the willingness of the contractor or the designer that you're working with to work with these ideas is key. You know, if you're meeting resistance, that's one thing. But if they're enthusiastic, they may not know everything, but if they're willing to take the time to learn about it and research it and try to make it work for your project, then that's worth
it. Yeah, you know, thank you for that. You know, there's something really, really powerful in what you had just said. I think from the aspect of greenwashing is, first of all, there's a lot of power in being able to tell somebody honestly, and there's a lot of integrity in being able to say, we don't know everything. And we'll have somebody on here in June, a couple in Renton that had been greenwashed, quote unquote greenwashed, and they hired somebody that were like, oh yeah, we can do that, we can do that. And there's a lot of power in being able to say, how about if we learn this together and we don't know everything? So, I mean, that's my two cents worth from what I had gotten from that.
And, that reminds me of something. One of your questions in there was about green or products or how we use them or what that really means. There was an interesting job we did a couple years ago where we were asked to source a specific material for a siding. And we thought that we could probably obtain this material locally and for a less expensive cost and handle it in the same way. But the architect involved was pretty adamant that he wanted to use this material that was, help me if I'm not remembering this right, but was it like a sustainable farm or was some...
It was recycled timber.
Recycled timber. Okay, so here's this place in Canada that's shipping out recycled timber. But what goes into making it recycled? You know, well, you've got, you know, you're grabbing all this, your material from one location, you're shipping it to another location to have it milled and transformed into another product, and then you're shipping it back to some other place to be used. And you know, we said, okay, we'll play that. And what we learned was that we probably could have saved, overall, the client could have saved some money had we sourced it locally, and it would have been just the same. You just wouldn't have had that little stamp of this has been recycled material.
You know, yeah, well, that is actually at the heart of the whole green movement. And
absolutely,
stuff,
yeah.
You know, buy local and think global. And, yeah, there's a lot that goes into, you know, having something that has to be shipped from hundreds of miles away and stuff.
Yeah, even further. So, I mean, that's part of the understanding what green is to me, is where the products come from. How are they manufactured? Where do they have to go? All those different places before they get to me. You know, where I need them.
It's an amazing conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a little break, and we're going to be back and talk a little bit more. So we're here with Stefan and Drew from Encompass Cottages. And, we'll be right back.
You are listening to Healthy Homecast.
Me to the earth, which connects me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe. Came to rest on the minefield, blessed with naive mind shield, like a helmet. They would tell us that we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue, disillusioned little.
Okay, we're back. And welcome once again to Healthy Homecast, episode 13. We're here with Encompass Cottage Company. So, what descriptive words do you feel work best with people you communicate with? For instance, in my line of work as a painting contractor, words such as green and eco are fairly commonplace. What about with you guys?
I like values and sustainability, especially sustainability objectives, because you can't, you know, sustainability is a process that's reflective of our values. So you can't have it all. You really need to prioritize and go for the things that have the greatest impact. Values. Teamwork is important.
Collaboration. An attitude of just being open to having conversations about anything different, anything that's going on with your project, just openness.
collaboration and open-mindedness are very healthy actions.
Thanks, Daryl.
They are. So what is a healthy open mind? Is clean mind, because nothing can really stick in there.
There you go. Yeah. It would be a good idea. Anyhow, right. What does a healthy what does a healthy home mean to you?
All right, so I remember seeing this kind of as a prep question that you gave me, and I kind of chuckled, you know, because the word healthy home to me means a lot of stuff. It means, you know, a mental healthiness. It means a cleanliness. It means a level of
That's so much more practical than my answer, Drew.
Yeah, well, I wasn't even going to get to spiritual there, so, man, I don't know if I'm going on the right track or not. But, the healthy is much more than just a structure. It's a state of being. It's a way of thinking, and it's and ultimately a way of living. And
it's a state of sustainability.
Yeah.
It's making sure that what you do today meets the needs of the people who are there today and doesn't negatively impact the needs of the people who are to come.
Yeah, well said.
Exactly. So, that was actually the next question was about sustainability. Do you have any other thought about what sustainability means?
I'm still confused. I'm still figuring out what that whole definition of sustainability
really seven generations, means. Right? Yeah. There were Native American tribes who said that every choice you make, you need to think about the impact of that choice on the next seven generations. And our society and our culture and our sort of business ethics doesn't think that way right now.
It's a right here, right
does,
now.
Does the world think that way? I'm just curious. I'm still on that.
I don't know.
Do we know other nations or other countries that have embraced the sustainability theory and put it into practice longer and longer?
Most of the less industrialized, less polluting countries that have the thing that you were talking about, spirituality and community and stuff, the ones that are the only ones that sign on to the pollution treaties and stuff. Yeah, they've had those types of mindsets and stuff for thousands and thousands of years.
Then we have something to learn from them.
Yeah,
I'd say.
Well, I think something happens when you become so vastly technologically advanced and your level of fluency rises to a point where you forget about those things. You know, you're distracted by the shiny floors and the shiny cars and all that stuff, and you lose track of that stuff.
Yeah, we're getting into the hippy dippy talk here that we do once in a while in Healthy Homecast.
Sweet, that's my favorite part.
It's when the I'm not going to put it in my
edit.
So, what is healthy and or sustainable about what you guys do as a business?
It's funny because construction is inherently not all that sustainable, right? You're using up materials to build something else that someone's going to use,
Okay, so we've gone through as a company and put into practice things that help protect our environment with the lead safe removal certification that we have to do. It's standard practice. It's not just, a suggestion, but our guys wear dust masks. We wear dust masks. We wear gloves to protect ourselves and eye gear to protect ourselves.
We run HEPA filters when we're doing demolition to protect the occupants, and all of our trash gets sent to a sorting facility so that as much as possible that can be recycled is recycled. And
Based on the size of the project, too, if we're doing a rather large, deconstruction and then reconstruction, we'll have separate containers set out for those, things, wood or recyclable material, just metals and then cardboards and the rest garbage. So we can try to, separate that stuff before it gets to a landfill.
Those were kind of practical answers. You can ask the question again. I got.
Those are great answers. And by the way, there's another thing about Healthy Homecast. There's no right or wrong answers.
No, but you sparked something else in
what
my mind.
What is healthy or sustainable about what you do as a business?
We're trying to keep it sustainable right now. The economy is having its way with us, but
well, we try to keep it simple. Okay. I think is one of the other things. You know, we operate. We're a fairly small firm. You know, there's Drew and I, and we've got two lead carpenters, and then some helpers that show up when we need them. And so we try to keep it small, which to me helps with sustainability, because in our industry, if you get too big, that's not going to be sustainable for long. It's a cyclical business. And the other thought just slipped my mind.
So you just brought up an interesting thing, because you just started to touch on the next question. Do people really care about the environment in this economy?
Okay, so
have to ask them,
now,
I guess,
this could go on a whole other tangent here. You know, I don't know, Daryl, what people care about. I know that people claim to care, you know, and I think that everybody does care to some degree, but the level in which I think that they can do anything about it sometimes is really based on their economic position or their actual position in our community or in society. You know, I think people like Bill Gates, who have a huge source of money and a huge notoriety, could impact this field differently than a regular Joe, day-to-day kind of person, if they wanted to change it. I think that the choices that each family or individual have to make really are those choices. They have to decide, do they want to recycle that, or do they want to just throw it in the garbage? Are they lazy about that or not? You know, do they maintain some of the things that they have to maintain in order for them to get the life expectancy out of them, or do they just purchase something and then let it deteriorate without maintaining it? That's all levels of, you know, some sort of sustainability and some sort of, you know, how much do they care, you know, is shown with that. You know?
I also think education is so important, because, you know, if the collective attitude among everybody was that sustainability was the guiding principle in so many of our choices, then I think economics would take a different role. You know, I think there's a definitely distinct, direct relationship between our sustainable choices and our long-term economic stability. But we don't recognize the connections right now. It's a pretty complex issue, and I think it's something that really has to be integrated into all the things we learn about as we go through life. You know, I really believe that sustainability as a concept needs to be introduced in elementary school and taught all the way through college as a construct of all the other things you learn. Because anything you do, if you don't do it sustainably, then you will eventually reach the end of the rope.
Mm. Yeah, I've actually had clients and stuff tell me that just recently. As a matter of fact, we're going to be going into the elementary schools and talking about environmental responsibility. So this is, it may or may not be associated directly with either of your companies. Can you, each of you, tell me what person, idea, thing, or things has had the greatest impact on your life and has helped you with your successes in general?
Sure. That'd be specific. That you said be specific, right, about people.
As specific as you choose.
Sure.
Yeah. Or as vague.
Right. Mom and dad, you know, a god, this guy Bill W., and all of the people that I've really ever interacted with have added to that.
We are all one. Stefan?
Uh,
And Stefan.
You guys are so sweet.
We're all tearing up now.
Wow. You know, every interaction I have with people, even the interactions where someone's cantankerous, make me think about the character of the relationships we have and how that really defines what our lives are about.
We are all ultimately the same person.
I don't know if I'm going to go that far.
That's my two cents. For it. So what helpful hints or wise advice of significant meaning to you could you share with others?
Say that again.
Any helpful hints or wise advice?
Oh, right. I remember this one too. Yeah. I was, wise advice. Double check everything I tell you. clean your ears. Just keep laughing. Keep smiling. Yeah.
Yeah. It's everything's got to be fun. I mean, you know, I got into this business because it's fun and I care about it and it's fun and I get to work with fun, cool, weird people and I get to meet weird, fun, cool people. And some that aren't so fun or cool, but they're entertaining as well.
They're still people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. I love it. What groups or organizations do you support or are you affiliated with?
I'm ready for that one. I made a list because I don't think I could remember them all. Let's see. Here, Drew, you can read the list.
Oh, okay. The list would be the Northwest Eco Building Guild, the Built Green Community, Sustainable West Seattle, Green Roofs for Healthy Cities, Sustainable Building Institute. We're also part of the Master Builders here in the greater Seattle area. And other groups, organizations do you support?
Well, we support the West Seattle blog.
Yeah,
they
we
rock.
Support the Sweet. Blog and the Berrien blog. And we do support... you know, our local elementary schools where our children go and do fundraisers for them.
Advertising dollars at work.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. We're just basically a couple of
regular
guys.
Joes.
Regular Joes, yep. Regular Joes.
And any others? That?
No.
So what web... Okay.
Save Japan, you know, that fun.
So
maybe.
What website, phone number, Facebook, Twitter, blog would you like people to check out and contact you by? You know, if there's any one or all of them, and we'll make, by the way, make sure that they get posted along with your episode.
All right. Well, we've got websites for EncompassCottages.com and Encompass-LLC.com, which is our remodel site.
And that's N-C-O-M-P-A-S-S.
Thanks, Daryl. That's right. We chose to spell it without the E.
Or the I, just the N. Yeah. It confuses all of our suppliers still.
N before E or I.
Yep.
N as in Nancy, compass, all one word.
Construction or cottages, depending on, you know, what company you're talking about. Yeah. We're just all encompassing.
That you are.
Yeah.
So do you have any...
Can we take some hugs now?
Yeah. So do you have any upcoming events or information or specials to offer our listeners that we can post on our site?
Well, Drew mentioned we're doing the cottage workshops.
Yeah, and we will put updates on there as they come
our
up.
Our first one is going to be on aging in place.
Do you have a date for that yet?
We don't. Okay. We're working with the Finney Center to set something up.
Perfect. Oh, you're awesome. That's a good organization to be involved with.
And we're going to be at the Sustainable West Seattle I'm not sure what they're calling it. Yeah, we're going to have a booth at Sustainable West Seattle.
Tony knows. Tony's involved with them.
During West Fest in West Seattle.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what we've got planned for this year so far.
Cool. We'll make sure that we know about that stuff and then we can post it. Okay, well, I guess that's it. Any last words or anything that you feel was left out? Because this is your last chance, guys, to say what you got to say, and then we're wrapping it up here at Healthy Homecast.
I've known you for a long time, Daryl. I'm just really impressed. I'm very happy to be here as a guest and really happy to see you embracing this and taking it in the direction you are. It's just giving me chills, man. Right on.
Well, thank you, and you're welcome. Well, it's people like both of you guys that have inspired it, and I really do believe that we're all in this together. Any last words?
I can't top that. That was I'm going to cry. I'm going to
no
cry
last
again.
Words from the sage, Stefan?
Have fun. Love what you do. Take care of people. And if you want to build something,
give us a call.
We're awesome.
Yeah. We can build it. You can dream it. We can build it.
Right on.
And we can do it small.
So this has been another episode of Healthy Home. Oh, doesn't the thing at the end say all that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Tony. Thanks a lot. Take it away.
Thanks, Tony.
Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Healthy Homecast, brought to you by HealthyPainting.com. Please feel free to contact us with any comments, questions, or suggestions for upcoming show topics or guests. Call us at 206-650-4587 or send a direct email to info@HealthyHomecast.com. Be sure to check back. New episodes coming soon.
Desert low, smells like rain.